Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sadhu. The state of awakening. So I thought we might turn now our attention, because I, you know how classical I like to be, to the Eightfold Path. Does that interest you? Mm-hmm.
To the who?
Eightfold Path. I don't think you're a member of the who, but...
I do, actually.
And the Eightfold Path starts with what? Do you remember? Sometimes review, sometimes,
Number one.
Sometimes it's called right view, sometimes it's called right understanding. Now, there are different ways of teaching the Eightfold Path. One of the ways that's like most commonly, you will hear most often, is that the first right view or right understanding or right thought are mind. And right speech, right action, right livelihood are body. And the last two are, I'm sorry I left some out, but then the last two are speech. No, have we done it wrong?
Mind. The first two would be speech?
Yeah, right view, right thought. They call that mind. Right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right awareness, right concentration, and right wisdom.
Okay.
So sometimes they teach that the first two are, they sometimes teach it different ways, but basically they usually divide them into body, speech, and mind. You've seen that, haven't you, in the text sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have my favorite way of looking at it from the different teachers that I've had the good fortune of meeting. And my understanding is that right view is the beginning, the middle, and the end. Right thought is not separate from right view. Right speech is not separate from right thought and right view. Right action. That they are so interwoven. You cannot practice right livelihood unless you have right view. You cannot have right view unless you have right livelihood. It's like they're facets of this incredible crystal. So what is right view? Is that for me to answer? Do you have some?
It's got to be how you look at things, how you perceive things.
Sometimes it's called right understanding too. So it's view more like concepts, rather than eyeballs.
Okay.
I don't think either one of those, either view or understanding, quite grasps, you know, the meaning of it in Pali. But they if you put them together, they sort of point in a direction.
Don't you have to ask yourself who's asking? Like who's looking?
And for right view, you mean?
And then that conclusion would be, you'd have to understand that there's no inherent self that's asking the question.
What does that mean? Does that mean that there's no question being asked?
No, it means that...
So what is? How does the question arise?
Well, we're having the question right now.
Yeah, how does it arise when you said, doesn't that mean that...
Well, if you're looking at it from an egocentric point of view, then you're always going to end up with, it won't be the right view.
That's not true. It's going to be an impermanent view. There's nothing wrong with ego. It's thinking that there is a fixed identity. That's the problem. There is nothing wrong with ego. ego is what gives us awareness, isn't it?
Yeah.
But to think that there is a fixed identity, unchanging self, not to see the self changing from perception to perception. Like if you're having a conversation with someone and they start telling you something about Niagara Falls and you have never experienced that and you have a different view of it, and then they start talking about how the weather was this and it changed it that way, and then you go, oh yeah, I can see how that, right? So there's two different selves there, right?
Mm-hmm.
First one that's right, and then the second one that's right in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know my favorite story. The secret of life is in what you mean to tell me. Secret of life is in a goddamn flower. Oh, you mean it isn't? One self, another self. But no clinging to any of the selves. No sense of the, not ignoring the change. That's hard to do, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like an I. Oh, I always and I never. But the perception changes, the emotion changes, and there's a totally different I, isn't it? I've sometimes been mad at someone and then suddenly realized I wasn't really mad at them, I was sorry. That we couldn't understand each other. Any of you ever have that kind of experience? So which is the right eye? Every one of them within that mind state. Which one is the fixed eye?
None of them.
So, skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fresh heads. Depending whether it's in the moment, okay, cut that one off, okay, cut that one off. The eye is a mind state. It's a mind state. Dependent on circumstances, this mind state arises. Dependent on circumstances. We know this, but we ignore it, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Don't we?
Oh, some of us. More often than others. But
what causes that ignoring? Is it a fear?
I think it's really just, fear is a great big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you're sitting, for I find in our society the number one fear people have is that they have to be right. I don't know if any of you ever. But that's what I find. Does that make sense to you? That there is this sense that there is something you're supposed to be, or a way you should act, or how you should perform, or how you should look, or who you should manifest as for others. Or so there's like these two. There's this one I, and then there's this other one who's the resident expert, always coming back and telling I what I didn't do right or wrong. What's that article that I gave you copies of? Crime and Punishment, remember that?
Yeah.
And I think that in our society, that's the biggest suffering that we have, is thinking that there is a right rather than being able to just watch how the self changes all the time. The number one thing that we're trying to do with meditation is just focus in the moment, and then you can actually watch the mind change. First a dog barks and this thought comes and you say, oh, thinking, and you come back to the breath. And then you watch another thought will come based on, oh, I shouldn't have been thinking or whatever. Or else I wonder what that, who owns that dog, or you know.
Well, I wonder what else I missed.
Absolutely. And then we have 1,000. But the real point is, as T.S. Eliot says, at the still point of the turning world, there the dance is. Neither from nor toward. You see, I am saying something I've said before. I shall say it again. Shall I say it again? There is only the dance. And the dance only exists because of the still point. How does a wheel turn? Because of a still point. The spokes are the different selves. When they're moving fast, you can't see their separateness. They move very fast. They move very fast. Because circumstances are changing all the time, aren't they? Feel a little chill, feel too warm. Like that one, didn't like that one. Why did she use that word? Why didn't she use that word? Aren't they? Just boop, 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 boop. Oh, I should have wondered if I locked my car. Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter anyway. Oh, but I think I left my wallet. Oh, well. Is that possible? So then there's like, sorry?
What I find amazing is that I just slip into it and buy into it, and I'm totally sucked into it. And when I realize what has happened, I feel like this sense of, wow, yeah, there is no fixed identity. But then 2 seconds later, I've forgotten that already.
That's
like
right.
I feel suckered in or something, like it's swept up or...
You're not suckered in. It's like every sense of every circumstance triggers past memory and future possibility. We only recognize something because of the information we've stored in our brain. Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you see those movies on those CBC, mm-hmm. Science of the Senses? How do you see something out there? You don't. You see it in here. The information comes into your brain. You go through the word, do a little word search. Oh, and those are glasses with dark rims. I'm not seeing them out there. The information is going into my brain, and my brain is projecting it out there based on past experience. And who is it that remembers that, whatever all the circumstances of dark rims are? If I met somebody that I hated in grade 3 who had dark rim glasses, because they used to beat me up every recess or something, when I looked at your glasses, I would try to look away. That emotion would come with that. Remember the 5, 6 mm-hmm. senses? Mm-hmm. The guy who was the chef who was given the smell of liver and onions and went, oh, God, that's horrible. Oh! And then this scent was pumped into the room while he was tasting it. The scent got stronger, and then next time they didn't do the taste of liver and onions, they just did the scent, and immediately he felt uncomfortable. Like that. Each self arises with a past and a future based on previous experience projected into the present.
Tonight, you were talking about Olivia and how until a child is about 3, they have no...
Just before they're 3, they don't really have a strict sense of self. They can seem like they do.
Yeah.
But first, it's just gathering the data for a self to emerge from. And the self changes in every moment once the data is there. Then depending on the circumstance, what's that sound? Might be a burglar. Oh, my God. What's that sound? Oh, it's probably Bob coming home. I think I'll surprise him. Sound, different self. Right?
But what is it in her that's doing that? The brain itself as it's developing?
The brain is storing information and trying it out.
Oh.
And developing an immense vocabulary, which includes an iPad.
So based on the reaction, then based on the reaction that she gets from the people that
yeah,
she lives with,
very much so,
she's going to do it again or not do it again
or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. What gets rewarded. Isn't that how you train a dog or a cat?
Yeah.
Well, how you train humans too. Yeah. But then the self comes in. And then different emotions are triggered, that is mind states, dependent on the past memories. And then you build a vocabulary of that. Once you have the experience of remembering the liver and remembering the circumstances and letting the emotion go, that no longer has the power. That's what's interesting. Once you can see the selves rather than be the selves, it isn't a matter of whether you see them all the time or you be them all the time. It's a matter, even if you can see it for a moment, that's power. That's profound. That's profound. That's valuable. Then you immediately say, oh, this is a mind state arising dependent on. And maybe you can see what it depends on. Which is way more than, it isn't that there's anything right with the mind state or wrong with the mind state, seeing that it's dependent on circumstances. If something arises dependent on circumstances, is it permanent?
No.
Why?
Because the circumstances are changing.
Well, I'll be, that's true.
Is it real in any way then?
It's relatively real, but relativity is changing all the time. In relation to past experience, it's real. But whether you want to continue it, relative means in relation to. Whether you want to have a choice in it is the question.
So it's not that we're just projectors either, then.
If there is awareness of the projection, then there can be a choice. Not one of those mind states is wrong. Not one of those mind states is right. Not one of those selves is wrong. Not one of those selves is right. They're adornments for the mind of compassion.
So they're kind of like
what Buddha said, what I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled thereby. You've heard me say that so many times. I love that one.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
So it's like one of those screwdrivers that's got like multi numbers of bits that rotate around, and depending on what
the circumstance,
what you want to use it for, you put a certain bit in because it works better than all the other bits.
That's right. And there isn't a fixed bit.
Yeah, yeah.
There isn't a fixed self.
But there is that still point.
There is a still point. That's called emptiness. Or no inherent self. No inherent self. Inherent means I live here. There's a hole for the different brows to go into. Different bits fit into a hole.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant example.
Yeah.
Is that interesting to you, Don?
Mm-hmm.
And the function depends on what the motive is then.
And that is how right understanding or right view starts. Morality. Your motive is what makes you open to see no inherent self, to see the space. If we have done something that is less than perfect in our own mind, we're going to be immediately, the resident expert gets in the driver's seat, right? I. You. There's no space. If we're just open and interested, there's space. So it's easier to see the rising selves and the empty space in which they're arising. which bit should be used now. Mm. Morality is what gives us the power to be open. Otherwise, we're defensive, aren't we? If we feel like we might be wrong or somebody else, we're right. If we're right, somebody's wrong. If we're wrong, somebody's right. Where's the openness in that? Are you liberal or conservative? Yeah. Yeah. Right, thank you. Yeah, exactly. NDP, well, up there. Green Party. Mm. Thank you, yeah. Mm. It's not an American view. It's more a Canadian view. Was that a little too nationalistic? Do I get away with that? No? I don't get away with that. Okay, erase that.
Does the view exist?
The view is already stored in the brain. From the time before we're even born, there is propensities toward liking this and disliking that. The time we come into the womb, certain wombs and sperm together have a magnetism, and certain other ones we don't even see. So this works because this is exactly the kind of problem whoever made me wants to work with.
Okay.
Whoever it is wants to be hit by it forever.
But there would be certain things that are functions of being a human being as opposed to being
an
a
animal.
Dolphin. Or
yeah, exactly.
A tree.
Magnetism. There's a magnetism to a particular meaning of the fertile point.
So our problem really is that we actually think too smallly, too littly,
minutely,
too limitedly.
Way too limited. Yeah, not actually seeing how many selves there are in since we sat in this room. Been one or two, haven't there? No. Yes, maybe. And the self depends on protecting the self or being open with the self depends on morality. Cease to do evil. That's the first part of right understanding or right view. There are four parts to right view. First one is be open. That means don't have any secrets. How do you do that? If there's nothing to hide, how do you do that? If you're always try to be even with everything around you. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Kindness. True? The minute you're not kind, you can feel it, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was their fault. I was really tired. 1,001.
Yeah, but they always do that.
It's not the first time. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
So wrong view is ignorance.
Wrong view is basically not paying attention to the difference between self-grasping and altruism. And it's not that subtle, really, when we pay attention to it, is it? It's only subtle if we don't pay attention to it. You know what it feels like when you tell a lie. Mm-hmm. There's this kind of slight discomfort, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And if you're not lied, you just will put your hand up. <It's close. laughs> And what does it feel like? It's kind of slight, isn't it?
Somebody stepped on the counter of worms.
Yeah, and almost like a righteousness comes up. Well, I'm just trying to make a point. So that's separate, isn't it?
But it even starts, I can remember the Olivia, the first time she did something that she knew, I don't think she would, in her mind, she wouldn't say it was wrong, but she knew that what she
wanted... She knew that the reaction would be negative.
Yes.
So that's responding to the emotion.
Yeah.
That's right.
And her response was just the same as my own response to when I lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it exactly. Starts early.
It starts from day one. It starts before you're born. But how, you know, because we prefer to be accepted.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But the real point is, which feels better? Altruism. You have to, like, have a bit of experience before you can make that distinction.
Yes, for sure.
Which feels better, altruism or self-grasping? Mm-hmm. Because basically all that cease to do, all the evil is about self-grasping, isn't it? I am better, I am worse, I am equal. You're about I. Isn't that true? Oh, no, you go ahead and take it. No, I don't want it. No, you... Meaning, oh my God, I shouldn't take it. A very interesting story about the Buddha. You know, I was going to slip one in, didn't you?
Yeah.
I hate to surprise you. He was talking to somebody who was a member of a different group who had really loved his teacher, and this person was asking him about morality and about love. And the Buddha said to him, after a little bit of a discourse, which is right, to love oneself and then love another? No, first he said, there is this acrobat who is a master acrobat. He's excellent. He's absolutely the best acrobat in the multiverse.
He's so good.
And he has this trainee who is brilliant and catches things really, really fast, and he is very good. And they have been training for a long time. Now they're going to do a public act, first time, and it is very dangerous. And they don't have a net. And the trainer says to the trainee, just before they're going to perform, okay, you watch out for me and I'll watch out for you. And the trainee says, no, I'll watch out for me and you watch out for you. And then the Buddha says, who's right? Isn't that wonderful? Who's right? I'm sure each of you has some kind of answer, your own automatic response. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be kind enough all to say it all at the same time? One, two, three, now!
I don't know.
They're both right. You know, that unless you look out for yourself, you can't look out for others. Unless you take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. Unless you see that unwholesomeness is not helpful to you, you can't be open to others. Unless you're open to others, you can't be open to yourself. Isn't that beautiful? I love that story. That's right view.
So that's non-clinging awareness.
Isn't it? Just open?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean it isn't? That's different, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It opens the field, doesn't it? Which, of course, then there isn't the safety of fences, which means you can learn something new. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. How do you learn to do good? By enjoying joy. It's a terrible thing. Not by giving more than you want to. Not by giving less than you want to, but by being open without judgment, and then learning to do good. Quite neat, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There it is. Referring to this first, to this path, in his first discourse, the Buddha called it the middle path because it avoids two extremes: indulgence in sensual pleasures, which is low, worldly, and leads to harm, is one extreme; self-torture in the form of severe asceticism, which is painful, low, and leads to harm, is the other extreme. The middle way. So conventionally we talk of treading a path in the ultimate sense. The eight steps signify eight mental factors, and there's no way you can actually support mental separate mental factors that come depending on causes and conditions that trigger. You can't say, oh, I only want to think this, or I only want to think that, because if you do that, what will happen? If you decide you don't ever want to experience anger, what will happen?
You'll be angry all the time.
You'll be pushing it down and it will explode. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at anger and you decide what its strong point is, what would happen? What's the strong point of anger?
Focus.
Focus.
It is.
Energy and focus.
Energy and focus. What if you noticed you were angry and you took that and said, I think I'll focus on something beautiful? What if you took the energy and used it instead of, where are you going? I don't know, that's the horse. What if you took that energy? I learned this a long time ago. There was this person who used to tell me how wrong I was about everything, especially that I asked too many questions in classes and stuff. And he would come and just ream me out. Because he had stream entry, you see. He told me that.
He had what?
He had attained stream entry. He told me that.
Yeah.
So he was just helping me. And I would get... Thank you! And I would go stomping off through the woods. And one day I realized what I was doing. And I thought, I'm really picking out every word that is an insult. I'm really focusing on taking them spears and stabbing myself with them. I wonder if I started looking at his eyes and tried to see how many colors I could see them. What if I used the focus? And suddenly I started going, you know, he changed. Pretty soon he wasn't interested in telling me what I was wrong about. He had to find somebody else. He was a good teacher. He was a really good teacher. It isn't that there's one of the mind states that you can't use. It's who's writing. If fear is writing, you're going to use anger. Is that true? Mm-hmm. You look underneath fear, underneath anger. There's always a fear of losing something, isn't there? Yeah. What can you lose if you haven't already got it? That's just becoming, isn't it? Carrot, string, stick. Isn't it? If you haven't already got it, what can you lose? It's only the moment. Oh, and that is only the moment. Oh, and that is only the moment. And there's a continuum. What creates the continuum? The emotion. This emotion triggers this moment, triggers this. Okay, the emotion was anger. Oh, suddenly I decided to use the anger rather than having it use me. Oh, my anger has really good focus. I wonder how many colors I can see in his eyes. I got totally enthralled. He got totally bored. Every one of the mind states has a value. We often think that we're supposed to not have them, right? Like distraction. But what is it that's the strong point about distraction? Big focus. Okay, can I do a big focus on my breath? How many little parts of the breath can I see? Do you see how that's the same energy exactly? Like you're saying something about thinking when you're or losing, you know, being able to see yourself thinking and then not being able to see it. So it's like distraction from what you want. So like how to use that. Like don't narrow in so much on what's wrong with it, but open up your focus and think, oh, I got that. May all beings catch when they are distracted. So then you're using it for a bigger focus. There's not one mind state that we can't use. The question is, are they your adornment or are you being ridden? You're being carried by them. Are they fresh in the moment or skulls? It doesn't matter. But adornment? Are they based on the past, so they're empty of any? Or something that you can use every moment as if it were true flesh and blood, but for adornment of the beautiful? Mm-hmm. This is a really interesting question, isn't it? How do you want to do, how would you like to have the emotion rule the rebirth from moment to moment? Because the self is continuously being reborn, isn't it? Not just from death to birth, or death to bardo, but from day to day and night to night, mm-hmm. moment to moment. Cease to do evil, learn to do good. Learn how to take the mind states and use them. Ride the horse rather than the horse taking you. That's what learn to do good means.
So every circumstance becomes useful.
Every circumstance becomes the vehicle.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, because every morning I wake up and the body's different. Yeah. Went to bed with one hip sore and wake up with another hip sore or headache.
Yeah. Well, every moment I wake up and something is different. A minute ago the hip was sore, now it's not.
Yeah.
The mere perception that dependent origination and emptiness go together, that they are not alternatives, will destroy all the ways with which, by which one grasps at things with the mind. The mere perception that dependent arising and emptiness go together, no fixed identity, and dependent arising, dependent on this arising. And this is changing and ceasing, and this is moving, you know. Like the planets and the sun and the orbiting universe, you know. The moon. Everything's changing all the time. And something about that makes us a little edgy, doesn't it, in the ordinary life?
I don't like the fact that a button fell off my shirt when I was in. Who put my favorite cup in that cupboard?
We have 1,000, don't we?
Those ones are easier to ignore, but the one like, what am I going to do when the money runs out?
Oh, I better go spend some now.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good solution.
What am I going to do? Who am I going to be when I don't have a job, when I can't work? You know, those kinds of questions?
They're not any different.
They're not.
Speculation.
Yeah.
It's all speculation based on not being in the moment.
Yeah.
Rather than this could be the last breath.
Yeah.
Meditation on impermanence, said the Buddha, brings such great joy because you only have the moment. Meditation on impermanence is the meditation to do to awaken joy, said the Buddha, because there's only the moment. This is it. You know my other favorite thing about that cartoon? That I had posted on the wall in the closet. Remember that one? No? I was giving classes in Trauma, Ontario. Trauma is a big city in Ontario. And this person had a big apartment and she liked me to give classes there. In those days I used to have like 60 or 70 people come to classes all the time. One time I realized that the best class I could give, I had this cartoon and I cut it out and she had this quite big closet and it had a light switch on the inside and I pasted the cartoon on the inside of the door with scotch tape and turned the light off. And the class was, we all sat there and watched our breath and then one by one, everybody went into the room, the light was off, turned around 3 times, grabbed the doorknob, turned the light on, and looked. And then they turned the light off and came out. And the cartoon is 2 guys sitting on a mountaintop in robes. And one of them saying to the other, what do you mean what comes next? This is it. That was
was a whole class.
What do you mean what comes next? This is it. This is it. Oh, this is it.
It sure cuts through, eh?
Meditation on impermanence. Now, now, now. Eckhart Tolle, power of now. Mm-hmm. There's nothing new about that message, but it's always new if you listen.
I get this sensation of showing up for a class. It's like, show up, show up, show up, show up, show up.
Yeah.
Like, in every moment.
Every moment.
Actually be there.
Every moment.
For the lesson.
Be here. Be here.
Be here.
Yeah. And the teacher is all around you. Behind you, too. Because we tend to only look in front, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
But the teacher is behind, too. All space is singing joy. Let's learn to do good. What stops us from doing good? Because we think, oh, but I should. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not being in the present. Boring. Is this interesting to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I do like to be interesting. I wasn't going to talk about anything else tonight, so do you have any last questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
So back to the child, or birth. Science is proving that, in the womb, we're picking up things.
Mm-hmm.
We're picking up things before the womb.
Mm-hmm.
So now...
Before the womb? How science
well,
isn't proving that?
No, science isn't proving
that. I mean, I bought into it until that line.
Yeah. The Buddhist teaching is reincarnation.
What do you mean by that? That's a very misused term. What do you mean by that? If you mean from moment to moment reincarnation, I would agree, and that birth is no different than life. I would agree. Every moment is a moment of reincarnation. Mm-hmm. Dependent on circumstances, this arises. Dependent on circumstances, this arises. There's no different death or birth. No different. Whatever is the habituation, that's what creates the next moment. Whether it's life or death, it doesn't matter. See, I don't agree with some people's view of reincarnation at all.
Okay.
Like the whole past life, I was Marie Antoinette's second servant.
I don't doubt at all that, you know, there are qualities of Marie Antoinette in every one of us, male or female. Yeah. But I don't think that there is a self who... There isn't a self from moment to moment who is unchanging.
Right.
Let alone from birth to death to birth. There are propensities, habits, you want to call them, preferences, you want to call them. Great, no problem. There are preferences which can come with memories. You know, whoever that chef was, whoever, if that emotion hadn't been discovered, whoever it was, if they were in a really angry state, they would be attracted to the smell of a liver cookery somewhere so they could kill everybody who lived there. Do you understand? That if there are propensities, they are strong. They don't depend on a fixed identity. They create the chain. Identity is a chain. Dependent on this, this arises. It's not like this. Is that clear? Should I say more?
Let's, for
for an object or a person, if we're following the teachings of the 14th Dalai Lama now. Now, there's a 13th Dalai Lama before that, and a 12th Dalai Lama before
that. If he asked his willingness, I asked him what it felt like to be recognized as the Dalai Lama, because I met him, seven of us decided to go visit him in 1969 in India, 1968, 1969, somewhere around there. He had just moved to his place in India not too long before. And we went around, we were given an appointment, an interview with him like that. And we went around, we were told to go around the side of the house into the garden in the back, and as we come around the corner, there he was, standing there, holding each person's hand. No somebody to introduce or not sitting somewhere. I walked around the corner, and there he was, and he grabbed my hand, and I fell to my knees and started crying. I never did that for anybody. What sparked that? His energy. Then later I asked him, what did that feel like to be recognized as a Dalai Lama? He said, it's a tradition.
It's a tradition.
Yeah. He didn't say it was true or not true. He insinuated that if you were trained to be a Dalai Lama, you could be a Dalai Lama, whoever you are.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He insinuated that, but he never actually said it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So how somebody would be picked for that, maybe there is a continuum and maybe there isn't. But it is so complicated that the Buddha said, trying to find a first cause, who is the Dalai Lama? If you really try to do that, you'll go nuts. Have you found that which gives rise to the self, let alone which self goes from lifetime to lifetime? Themselves are mind states. There are propensities, there are talents. Undoubtedly, whoever made Bach loved music. You know, there's no question about that. Or what's that great Canadian?
Glenn Gould.
Mm-hmm. Whoever made Glenn Gould really liked to be superior. I went to a concert. I went to a concert in Toronto, Glenn Gould, and he's like talking and talking about the purpose of Bach. And he's going, and someone from the audience went, "It's to play him." And then my friend cheered.
Is that a female voice?
I couldn't be either.
So it wasn't you.
No. I was sitting there thinking, should I really, I'm not sure I understand what he's trying to talk about. I better really pay attention. Because it was Glenn Gould, eh?
Yeah.
And somebody giving me a ticket, eh?
Yeah.
It's to play. The purpose of life is to be here, not try to figure out who made what or who.
Just show up.
Show up. Every moment, just show up. Just show up. Just show up. I'm not saying that there aren't incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there are. I'm saying they happen from moment to moment. And propensities of, you know, it's like a river. A propensity for it to run a certain way. If something interferes, like a rock slide or something, then the river can easily change course and go in a totally different direction. We could think of like dirt, birth, and death like a rock slide, couldn't we? Like a death, it's like could be like it changes the flow. Mm-hmm. But there will still be the force of that stream with very similar kind of water, but have the same sources. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, the water, basically the water doesn't change.
So. Well, the water changes all the time,
well,
but it will.
Yeah, but,
but in more minute than the shape. It might be something that takes a totally different route. Maybe it's a Dalai Lama this lifetime, and next lifetime it wants to be a tax accountant. Who knows?
Because the circumstances would have changed.
Yeah.
So the purpose looks like within those kinds
different.
Of circumstances.
Yeah, it would be different.
Like the Dalai Lama born in Tibet in that culture is called a Dalai Lama. If he'd been born in California, he might have been called... I don't know. Leary, Timothy Leary. or Glenn Gould.
Yeah. Or Pat McKenzie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's the propensity that matters. And if someone is trained so that their propensity is developed, it's likely they will be a Dalai Lama, or they will be a Karmapa, or they will be a Lama, or will be a Rinpoche.
Because the training is really no different than the training for Glenn Gould to learn how to play the piano.
And if
so
there is already a talent,
if
their propensity opens in your life, there's probably some kind of talent there.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
Which is there because of causes and conditions.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
Yeah. And there are billions. But essentially... the mind states. That's why I cease to do evil. Then. What? Learn to do good. Okay? Is that good for this evening?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, isn't it, this Eightfold Path? You know, there's this beautiful gold light in your heart. Spreads through your body. Pours out your pores above, below, front, behind, right, left, four quarters, fills in, and then this moves out. Anybody you want to pray for, just go through the whole world. Let's do a few shots at Darshan and Mary. Everywhere.
And
everybody. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is no suffering. So thank you. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.